Is there a punishment imbalance in America's public schools? According to the latest government figures from spring of last year, black students are, on average, 3 times as likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. But what exactly is the goal of such a sanction or any disciplinary action in a classroom? Defining that goal and being clear about the message to students is perhaps a bigger challenge than just keeping order in the classroom. Eli Hager, reporter for the Marshall Project, went to Mississippi to see what the practice was down there. First of all, Eli, welcome to the program.
Hi, happy to be here.
Did you find an imbalance in Mississippi?
Yes, they do have an imbalance in suspensions. They suspend a higher ratio of black to white students than in any other southern state, and the South generally has a particular problem with this.
And so what were you looking for when you went down there based on the numbers that you had already looked at?
Well, I was looking at whether the state of Mississippi and the schools in Mississippi were doing anything instead of suspensions, because there's been a lot of pressure both from the federal government and the state of Mississippi to reduce suspensions and to try to start handling discipline in-house.
So the schools are attempting to come up with alternatives. And is it each school comes up with their own? Are there practices that they're trying to implement across the state?
To a large extent, it's each school comes up with their own, because in Mississippi, a defining principle is local control, and they don't like a lot of outside meddling. So each school district will have a very different way of approaching this. But the overriding principle is that in many districts, they're trying as best they can to reduce out-of-school suspensions.
And how are they doing that?
A lot of school districts are relying more on in-school suspension, which in Mississippi takes the shape of sending lots of students to this room during the day, many times for a whole school day or 2 or 3 school days, where they just sit and wait out the school day because they're being disruptive in class. Another alternative that a lot of schools are relying on even more than they used to is the alternative schools, which are these schools right down the road where they basically just send kids to wait out 10 or 15 or 20 days as punishment for in-school infractions. And there's not a whole lot of learning that goes on in there.
So that's not terribly much different than an actual suspension or expulsion if you're just moving them from building to building.
Right. I wouldn't say so, but it's a way of technically not suspending, and it's a way of keeping your average daily attendance up, which is a way of keeping your funding.
Did you see any practices that were real alternatives to suspension and expulsion that actually produced an alternative where the student didn't lose the classroom time but was able to be sort of put back into an orderly situation?
The schools in Mississippi are really struggling to do that, first of all, because they have a lot of traditional practices like corporal punishment and like in-school suspension that they rely on, and it's kind of hard to change the culture and overcome those traditional practices, but also because they don't really have the resources to hire counselors, hire special education teachers, hire tutors, hire behavioral interventionists, train the staff in a new discipline program. So in a very poor state, it's hard to come up with some of these alternatives. There were some schools that were struggling mightily and achieving a level of discipline in the school without sending kids to in-school suspension, without using alternatives. And they did that by a really concerted effort to change the culture of the school from the top down.
Who was the key agent of change who you managed to encounter down there? Was it a principal? Was it a teacher? Who was able to actually come up with alternatives? Or it sounds a little bit as though people are really just weighed down by a system of traditions.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that there was a lot of alternatives yet in Mississippi. I know that around the country, a lot of cities have gone to a restorative justice model, which has been very successful in some cities, particularly Boston, Denver, Oakland, California, Portland, Oregon. They've adapted this restorative justice model in which kids learn about the consequences of their actions as an alternative to suspension, and it's really worked in those places.
What would you say is the future for Mississippi? Grim?
Well, I don't want to say grim, because there are students and parents and teachers and administrators who are working really hard to educate the students. And in some places, students are going to achieve and be great as adults. But on the state level, I do think it's pretty grim, just because it's such a poor state. The Mississippi Delta has been so devastated by the mechanization of agriculture and the high unemployment and poverty there. It's really hard to find solid solutions to some of these problems.
Eli Hager is a reporter for the Marshall Project. He's just gotten back from a study of 2 communities in Mississippi. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Eli, a moment ago, mentioned that some urban schools are trying to address the punishment imbalance with what are called restorative practices. These are alternatives to suspensions and expulsions that keep kids in school and maybe puts them on a path to being less disruptive. You've expressed some skepticism about the effectiveness of suspension or expulsion.
This is Ellen Walsh from Paducah, Kentucky. I was suspended once for skipping school, and they still do that to this day. And I always wondered why, when somebody skips school, you punish them by giving them more days off. Makes no sense.
We're going to look at alternatives now. For the past 3 years, Leaders High School in Brooklyn has managed to achieve a nearly 70% decrease in disputes and incidents from embracing these alternatives. David O'Hara is principal at Leaders. Felicia Harper is the school's counselor. David said the expulsion numbers at his school cried out for some kind of fix.
Qualitative data really showed us that we were suspending a lot. We were having a lot of detentions. But then once we started to look at the hard data, we started to realize that disproportionately Black and Latino boys and students with disabilities were being suspended at a much higher rate than the rest of our school population. And I think it was at that moment when myself and our teachers realized that there's something that we have to do about this.
And there were two issues. One, fairness, and number two, maybe this isn't working.
Yeah, it wasn't as effective as we wanted it to be. And the other part is students weren't learning from their error, right? And the people that were being harmed didn't feel like there was justification or some type of understanding of what happened.
And suspensions have been going on forever. I mean, you faced that punishment. Maybe you didn't get suspended, but when you were growing up, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how do you come up with something that's an alternative to a punishment that's been around for generations?
So something that we looked at was suspension is something that's been around longer than we've been around,
yeah.
Right? And it hasn't been effective with the behavior that we want to see. Coming about it another way through restorative practice, we realized that not only are the kids understanding what they're doing, but they have an opportunity to give back to the community and to redeem themselves.
The original idea of suspension was to get a disruptive person out of the school. If you're going to do restorative practice, is there the risk that there's still going to be disruption of other students in the school if the individual is still around?
Well, yeah, there's no absolute to anything, but the likelihood is much lower than when we were using the traditional method.
And I can just say with the traditional method, we would send a student home for 2 or 3 days for making a mistake,
yeah.
And they wouldn't do anything. They become even more disenfranchised. They become angrier. They would come back and nothing was solved. And so they would still have the conflict with either that student or that teacher. And basically the behavior was not changed at all.
So you buy 2 days of peace in a couple of classrooms and the student comes back.
Sometimes even more disgruntled.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's go into an event that happened at your school and we'll try to explore how precisely and literally, you solved it. Here is the story of two students, Justin and JP.
You know, what he did, I didn't like. So I just got up and I punched him in the head and knocked him down and punched him several times more and I was dragged away.
I couldn't do anything at the moment because it all happened so fast.
It's kind of like a lot of it's a blur.
So two kids talking about a fight they had in a documentary about what happened at your school. How did you address this?
Traditionally, both of these students would have been suspended, just like any other school, for engaging in a fight. So in a situation like this, a student's just completed a week-long class on a class called a school-to-prison pipeline, and they learned a lot about the history of this. So with this particular case, the students decided to bring the two boys to a circle. And so in this restorative circle, students were able to discuss what happened during the event and come to some sort of conclusion and next steps.
This conference is going to focus on an incident which occurred on Friday the 11th in the library during the POL, which was a fight between Justin and JP.
Now you know that teacher, and tell me about what she's convening there. Is that the circle that you were talking about?
So she's the circle keeper. So her responsibility is to facilitate a dialogue around what happened, what was the harm that took place, and how can we move forward in a place where that situation doesn't occur, but also there's a respect between both parties.
And how are these conversations? How do they proceed?
it's really hard for a student, in this case Justin, to come to the circle and really look eye to eye to the person that he harmed and to hear how his victim has experienced this whole situation, how other key stakeholders, how the teachers were harmed by all of this, but also discuss what he was experiencing and come up with next steps so he can repair the harm that he's caused.
Did Justin bring his anger into that circle to a certain extent?
I think initially, but then he realized that everyone that was present was not only, we were all present for him, but also for the other person. So it was a community effort in the sense that we're here. There's no biases towards anyone. What they both learned is that there was a lot of miscommunication, nonverbal, that occurred right before that actual fight took place.
Boys often do that.
Yeah.
Nonverbal communications. I know what you're talking about. Here, listen.
The circle itself, nothing in the circle actually bothered me. It was just before that. It was like the peer mediation. That was the thing that bothered me. Because like at that moment, I was like still really angry at him. I didn't want to let him talk, and I was doing a lot of yelling. I didn't really want to fix the situation. So, and like after that and the moments that led up to the circle, I feel were like the best times, the things that really just started to fix everything.
Now, how surprised were you to hear that transformation in Justin?
He feels that he was heard. But also, if you listen to JP, he also felt the same thing. And something that we realized through like restorative practice is that the first step is letting that person tell their story, telling their version.
70% decrease in disputes and incidents at your school?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
And as of right now, we have zero suspensions so far since September 8th.
Mm-hmm.
David O'Hara is a principal at Leaders High School, a New York City Outward Bound school. Felicia Harper is a school counselor at Leaders. Felicia and David, thanks so much.
Thank you
so much.
Fights and more from you. St. Cloud, Minnesota. A boy punched my sister and I broke his nose. The dean recommended I take up boxing and my father made me hang drywall for free for the 2 days I was suspended.
My name is Gwen. I currently live in Brooklyn and I went to high school in Alabama, where I was suspended a total of 4 times for having my flip phone out in class, tardies, and having my shirt untucked, which is a uniform violation. And somehow I became a worthwhile member of society while being suspended once a year every year.
Rocky River, Ohio. My son was suspended for acting on self-defense after he was punched twice at a school football game. It was understandable in that he didn't try to just walk away, but it didn't make it any easier. Keep those stories coming. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or leave a comment at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.